Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on water issues surrounding the Blue Fire in Benbow last month. Eureka Workshops expose differences between owning and renting. The latest edition of Inside Humboldt Courts. And on an upcoming event for the Bryceland Fire Department. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from the city of Ukiah. Following careful consideration of the public input received throughout the process, the city of Ukiah's City Council Annexation Ad Hoc Committee is suspending work on the annexation initiative and will not advance further efforts to revise the draft proposal. During the past 2 years, the city developed technical, environmental, and fiscal analyses and received input through workshops, public hearings, written comments, and individual conversations. That input reflected differing perspectives and raised questions about the proposed boundaries, costs, service capacity, land use, representation, and the public process. The feedback received made clear that the current proposal does not have the foundation of public support and shared understanding needed to proceed constructively. From Humboldt County Public Works. The Humboldt County Department of Public Works will be conducting a surface removal and resurfacing project on Elk River Road in Eureka on Friday, September 4th. Work will take place at three project locations between Zanes Road and Wrigley Road. Contractors will remove the existing roadway, repair and rebuild the base, and finish with a new layer of asphalt. Work will take place from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Travelers are to expect 15-minute delays and are asked to drive slowly, follow all traffic control devices and road signs in the project area. If you have any concerns or questions regarding this project, please call 707-445-7421. A statement from Cal Poly Humboldt concerning the recent arrest of 43-year-old university student Delos Moore. Quote, "We understand that members of the campus community, particularly students and their families, are concerned following Monday's arrests, and we know that people have questions about student housing. A person's age or prior incarceration does not automatically disqualify an otherwise eligible student from university housing. Education changes lives, and we believe students should have the opportunity to participate fully in the college experience, including living in campus housing. We are equally committed to student safety, maintaining clear standards of conduct, and addressing misconduct. Housing eligibility is based on established university requirements and in accordance with state and federal fair housing laws. Students may be denied housing or have their housing revoked for misconduct under the student code or housing rules, loss of admission or enrollment status, non-payment, or violation of the housing agreement. We can't share circumstances of a student's housing eligibility or any actions concerning an individual student because federal and state privacy requirements limit what can be disclosed about an identifiable student's application, along with housing and disciplinary records. The university takes the allegations underlying Monday's arrest seriously. In compliance with the Clery Act, we notified the campus community following the arrest." End quote. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. Del Oro Water, which serves the Benbow District, faces questions after the August 20th Blue Fire, KMUD News reports.
On August 20th, resident Christine watched a black cloud roll up the hill toward her Benbow property. She grabbed sprinklers to wet down her home and quickly realized she barely had any water pressure to work with.
And so I start watering stuff down and I realize I have zero water pressure. And, I mean, our pressure is always bad, but it was so bad that I'm like, maybe I'm not even supposed to be using water right now. So I was, like, worried about.
The fire started at a nearby shop with a faulty battery suspected as the cause. As it spread, fire crews tried to draw water from a source on Blue Rock known as Wharf Pipe 218.
And the firemen told me that literally they were sucking so hard with their trucks that it collapsed the hoses.
Garberville Fire Chief Tim Teets, who was on the scene, told KMUD what actually happened there, and it's more specific than a simple water shortage. The source crews turned to is called a wharf pipe, essentially a large distribution line that feeds water from the system into a hydrant or directly into a fire truck, rather than a standard hydrant itself. In this case, it's known as Pipe 218. It was able to fill a water truck. What it couldn't do was push that water roughly 300 feet up the hill to reach the other fire tender, due to a lack of pressure. Crews tried and the hose flattened under the strain. They had to pivot to a different water source to keep fighting the fire. Teets confirmed that same pressure problem is what left Christine with next to nothing at her own property that day. The near zero water pressure that had her relying on sprinklers instead of a hose to wet down her home. Teets says this wasn't a matter of not having enough water. Del Oro storage is substantial, he says. The problem is the delivery system that's supposed to move that water where it's needed, which he describes as aging and undersized for the demand a fire like this puts on it. He also points to a second unrelated failure nearby. A hydrant already flagged as critical for fire response was hit by a car. Instead of repairing it or replacing it, Del Oro capped it. It's been out of service ever since. Teets says none of this should have been a surprise. He tells KMUD he's personally emailed Del Oro more than four times asking the company to run flow tests on the wharf pipes and hydrants in the Bembo area, and says he's never gotten a response. State rules require water utilities to flow test hydrants every 2 years and provide a water supply map to the local fire district. Teets says neither has happened in the 2 years since Bembo came under Garberville Fire District's jurisdiction. His point, if Del Oro had run those tests and mapped the system, the vulnerability at Pipe 218 would have been known ahead of time. Instead, crews discovered it in real time, in the middle of a fire. This time, they had somewhere else to turn, and it worked out. The hydrant and pipe issues track with other frustrations Christine and her neighbors say they've had with Del Oro, including a water bill that spiked to $424, which the company initially attributed to 39,000 gallons of usage before calling it a computer error. Christine says raised rates over the years were supposed to fund exactly the kind of infrastructure upgrades that failed during the fire.
Well, they've been totally caught red-handed. You bought a municipality for $500,000 in 2017, which is unheard of, and you didn't put anything in. You've just been robbing the goose.
Del Oro owns roughly 20 small water systems across Northern California. Christine says she's been in contact with a group called Water Warriors, residents in other Del Oro-served communities describing similar billing and maintenance disputes, though she says the group hasn't yet responded to interview requests. KMA News reached out to Del Oro Water directly with Chief Teets' account, asking whether the company had received his flow testing requests, whether it's aware of the water supply mapping requirement, and whether it had a response to reports that Pipe 218 failed to deliver adequate flow during the fire. In a written response, Del Oro said it had two utility personnel in the field during the Blue Fire assisting crews, and stated that all 21 hydrants in the Bembo District, quote, were in working order and were able to sustain adequate water flow throughout the fire, end quote. The company says it has not received any emails from Chief Teets and is unsure who he may have been corresponding with, adding that it will reach out to him directly. That statement addresses the hydrants. It doesn't address Wharf Pipe 218, the distribution pipe at the center of Teets' account, by name. Del Oro's response also didn't address the water supply mapping requirements or Christine's question about billing and rate increases. Del Oro says its hydrants worked. Teets says the piece of system that actually failed that day wasn't a hydrant at all. It was the wharf pipe that's supposed to move water to where it's needed most. And he says he's been trying to get the company to check that system for 2 years. In the meantime, this community isn't waiting around. In the days after the Blue Fire, neighbors rallied around Kirtan, whose shop was the source of the blaze. organizing a fundraiser to help him get back on his feet. This Friday, September 4th at Stone Junction in Garberville, friends are hosting a spaghetti dinner starting at 6 p.m. along with a 50-50 raffle and live DJs. It's a small but telling response to a hard month for this neighborhood, proof that even when the infrastructure fails, the community doesn't. If you've had your own experience with Del Oro water, billing, pressure, or infrastructure issues, Christine Miller is welcoming other Benbow residents to join her on Facebook, where she is starting a local chapter with Water Warriors. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Bridget Carstensen.
A presentation to the Eureka City Council showed how renters are experiencing housing challenges. Daniel Mintz reports.
Eureka Public Workshops have exposed the difference between secure home ownership and renters facing a market that's priced above their wages. Housing challenges were analyzed as the Eureka City Council fielded a presentation on the city's responsibilities and public opinion at its September 1st meeting. Senior planner Kelsey Flederick said the city's state-mandated obligation for blueprinting housing in the upcoming 8-year planning period is 1,740 units. Public workshops and surveying were done from June through August to tap community feedback, and some notable differences between homeowners and renters emerged.
So as I was talking to the community, I learned that renters are very concerned about the rising cost of rent with their wages not matching it, and they want to see more rent control. They're also concerned that the available rental units are in poor condition and that landlords are not maintaining the rental units. Owners believe that we should be documenting, monitoring, and encouraging productive reuse of our vacant spaces. And they're also very concerned about parking impacts. So as affordable housing is being developed with no parking and the major transit center means that, or if you're within a half mile of a major transit center, you don't need to provide parking. They're very concerned about what that means for commercial development. And then unhoused people believe that there are systematic barriers to being able to obtain housing. So discrimination against criminal records or the discrimination against housing vouchers.
The differences were also apparent when people were asked about their lived experiences with housing challenges.
I thought it was really interesting that the people who are reporting no housing challenges experienced are dominantly homeowners, while renters are finding that houses are the wrong size or type for my needs. So maybe they're only finding rentals with like two rooms, but they need three or four, or that it's housing is too far from work. And a lot of those cases where people are working in Arcata and living in Eureka, but they want to work in Eureka. And then people who identify as other report problems with a landlord or experiencing discrimination. And I also want to clarify here that when I was talking to unhoused individuals, the discrimination that they were experiencing was maybe they hadn't been incarcerated and that is on their record. And then people who are renting don't want to rent to them, or they're using vouchers and they're not being accepted for vouchers. And a lot of people reported discrimination against pets. So a lot of people not being able to find housing because they have pets.
Asked about housing development strategies, quote, owners believe that we should be acquiring land to make it available for affordable housing development. And renters think, quote, we should be updating city regulations to make it easier and faster to build housing. Those in the other category said, quote, we should encourage accessory dwelling units through pre-approved plans, loans, and other incentives. Flederick also said the wait lists for low-cost and public housing are so long that, quote, some people just kind of lose hope. During the council's discussion, Councilmember Renee Contreras-Deloach noted the delta between those who own property and those who don't.
Just an observation, you can see the tension between those who are already in a comfortable position own a home and are, feeling pretty set and settled versus, the group of people that are out there in the rental marketplace and are watching that volatility inside the rental market here. So, just kind of further validation for, continuing to build.
The information from the workshops and surveys will come into play as the city works on its state-mandated housing element plan. Frederick said a fair housing questionnaire will, quote, give us a better idea of what the community is actually experiencing and what we're missing. Also at the meeting, the council unanimously voted for a 45-day moratorium or freeze on the siting of AI data centers in the city while staff works on regulations. The rules will define what constitutes a data center, triggers for regulation, and limits on use of water and energy. Draft regulations will come to the council next month when the moratorium could be extended for 10.5 months and potentially for up to 2 years as zoning and coastal plan amendments are drafted and approved. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A case involving two known victims just became a case with six. And a murder conviction from 2022 still isn't the end of the story. Ryan Hudson has this week's Inside Humboldt Courts.
This is Inside Humboldt Courts. Your courthouse rundown includes a 2022 homicide case that most people have probably assumed was closed years ago, but it's not. A sexual assault case that just grew from two known victims to six, spanning over a decade. And lastly, a child exploitation case that just escalated sharply after months of sitting. First, in the case of The People versus Austin Medeiros. Back in April of 2022, Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies converged on Neeland for what was first reported as a suspicious death. This reporter for Redheaded Black Belt was the only reporter on the scene that day. What we found was an abandoned minivan left at the edge of the Arcata Community Forest as officers scrambled inside the forest, guns drawn, looking for the suspect. The driver's side door was seen hanging open with a cane belonging to the vehicle's true owner near the passenger side of the vehicle. According to the sheriff's account at the time, deputies were called out after the victim's caregiver arrived for a scheduled visit, but was denied entry at the door by a man inside. The man allegedly assaulted the caregiver and fled in the resident's van. The caregiver then found Emily Loba dead inside her home. Deputies spotted the van a short time later in the freshwater area and tried to pull it over. According to the criminal complaint, the driver, Austin Medeiros, refused to yield and drove directly into oncoming traffic to evade them. The pursuit ended on Fickle Hill Road, where Medeiros abandoned the van and fled on foot into the Arcata Community Forest. That's where we found officers looking for Medeiros. The forest was closed to the public. Multiple law enforcement agencies, backed by canine units and ATVs, searched for hours without finding him. Cal Poly Humboldt even issued a campus-wide alert, warning students to use caution. However, at the time, the sheriff's department also advised the public that there was no danger. Medeiros remained at large for 11 days before he was found and arrested in Santa Cruz County. The jury convicted Medeiros in 2023, finding him guilty on every charge he faced. First-degree murder, evading a police officer, unlawfully taking the victim's vehicle, assault and battery, felony assault with a deadly weapon, and two more charges, possessing a weapon while in custody, and battery on a custodial officer, both stemming from something that happened after his arrest, while his case was delayed for months by a mental competency dispute. He was ultimately sentenced to 25 years to life in state prison plus additional time. But here's why we're revisiting this case now. An appeals court later reversed one of Medeiros's 8 convictions, just one count, sending it back for further proceedings while confirming the rest. That reversal also triggered a new competency review this year. The court found him mentally fit and formally resentenced him this spring on all the counts that remained standing. The reversed count itself, though, was never resolved. After a continuance granted in August, it's now set for its own bench trial, not a jury trial. More than 3 years after a jury first convicted him for murder, this case still isn't over. Next, in the case of the People versus Brian Marquardt. In the Marquardt case, a newly filed amended complaint reveals a pattern of alleged abuse against six separate victims spanning over a decade, not just the two counts originally charged against him. Brian Lee Marquardt was originally charged with two counts from 2018, a forcible lewd act against a 7-year-old girl and a forcible rape involving a 17-year-old. However, the amended complaint adds 9 additional counts with 5 more victims. Taken together, the amended complaint now alleges serious crimes of abuse against 6 individual victims, 5 girls and 1 boy, ranging in age from 7 to 17 at the time of the alleged conduct, across incidents stretching from 2007 through 2018. The case has moved slowly through the pretrial proceedings for months, and now a new preliminary hearing on that amended complaint to review evidence of the new set of charges is set for October 13th. Finally, in the case of the People versus Shadow Forest Randazzo, another case worth flagging. This one escalated sharply after sitting quietly for months. Shadow Forest Randazzo was first arrested back in March on charges related to distributing child sexual abuse material and distributing lewd material to a minor. He was later released from custody on supervised release orders while the case proceeded. Then, in mid-July, prosecutors filed an amended complaint adding a far more serious count, alleging Randazzo engaged in a pattern of sexual abuse against a child under 14 going back to 2007, almost 20 years before this case was ever filed. At a bail review hearing in July, a Humboldt County Sheriff's Sergeant testified about the new allegation, and the judge found the evidence credible and convincing enough to determine Randazzo poses a danger to the public. The judge terminated his supervised release and ordered him held without the possibility of bail. Randazzo was formally arraigned on the expanded charges in August, pleading not guilty across the board. Now, a jury trial is currently scheduled for October 5th. That's this week's Inside Humboldt Courts. I'm Ryan Hudson for KMUD News.
The Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department is hosting a free community party on Saturday, September 12th. KMUD News reports. The Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department is hosting a party and barbecue on Saturday, September 12th at the Beginnings Octagon in Bryceland. Admission is free, food plates are only $10, and there will be beer and wine for sale along with live music. KMUD News spoke with Nick Riley, board member and head of the fundraising committee for the Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department, to learn more about this year's event.
We have our annual fundraiser called Fired Up, but this year we're kind of rebranding it more as a community party. So we're calling it the Fired Up Party for the Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department. It's at Beginnings Octagon Saturday, September 12th, 3 to 8 p.m. We have music by Bloom and Groovadelics, both local bands. I'm sure everyone will recognize the members of the band. There's a lot of local players in there that are in a bunch of different things. And then we have Barbecue by Moses Dancer with sides by Chef Christy Augustine. And this year, as an appreciation and to make it more of this community party, we're selling our plates of food for only $10. So we really want to encourage everyone to just come down and hang out with us and, you know, meet your local firefighters, or even if you're not in the district, if you just want to come for a good party and hang out with everyone, we'd love to see you down there. You know, if you do want to support more than that, we are going to sell some Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department merch and things like that. And then, as always, we have beer and wine for sale. So, yeah, we'd appreciate it if the community wanted to come out and celebrate with us, especially in the middle of a busy fire season for us. I think we will have some firefighters still out on assignments, But we'll have a good chunk of them at the Beginnings Octagon.
Nick Riley of the Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department also spoke of the importance of supporting smaller fire departments financially, and how this year's event, put on by the Bryceland Department, is more of a community celebration rather than strictly a fundraiser.
Fundraising is one of the main sources of income for a lot of the smaller local fire departments. It's definitely how Bryceland kind of built itself up. I think everyone knows now that we are one of the larger volunteer fire departments, and we're involved in kind of bringing together a lot of the other smaller departments on collective projects. So these fundraisers, and specifically with us, more of a party this year, is to really just raise awareness about these, you know, smaller fire departments, get them some money that they can use to then bring more equipment into the community that they serve and be able to better provide emergency services. You know, despite all these other kind of fire-related activities that Bryceland in particular and many other departments do, the core of it is still a volunteer-based local emergency response. So anytime there's an accident, a medical emergency, or a fire-related incident in the Bryceland Fire Protection District area, it's all serviced by our volunteer fighters who are not getting paid. So any of the active fundraising that we do ends up going towards providing better local services.
The community is invited to attend the Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department's Fired Up event on Saturday, September 12th from 3 to 8 p.m. at the Beginnings Octagon. Admission is free for all attendees. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Ryan Hudson and Daniel Mintz, along with our assistant director, Bridget Karstensen. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.